This music rocks a little bit, Sherman Alexie, for you, right?
I'm enjoying. This is so un-NPR.
Our director, Arwin Nix, has been choosing some un-NPR music.
I am very impressed, Arwin. I thank you. There was Skinny Puppy when I was sitting in the green room. I wanted to dance, and I haven't danced since Skinny Puppy was hot.
Sherman Alexie is a writer. He is a creator. He is a Twitterer galore. In 20 years since he's adapted his work for film, The Lone Ranger and Tonto Fistfight in Heaven, it's been, he's published 24 books, fiction and poetry. I said that wrong. It was his first major work, The Lone Ranger and Tonto Fistfight in Heaven. I'd like to say it more correctly. He won the National Book Award for his young adult novel, The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, which, as you recall, I loved.
You did love
it. And I loved the one before it, too, and you called that one a
iffy.
Double.
Flight is iffy.
Flight. You said it was a double.
I think it's like a sacrifice fly now. Flight was the sacrifice fly that brought True Diary into home.
That's pretty cool.
There we go.
Was that your thinking? I mean, not your...
I just made that up right now.
That's good. He has a new book of poems, What I've Stolen, What I've Earned. And this Saturday, you can find him selling books at 5 different independent bookstores around Seattle. What is that about?
Well, since it was my idea, Indies First, where I challenged writers across the country to volunteer on Small Business Saturday in their local independent bookstore to be booksellers. There's a lot of bookstores in Seattle, and everybody wanted me, and I have loyalties and friendships with all of them. So I decided to do the most mentally ill, dysfunctional thing possible and do 5 stores in one day.
Do you expect that you'll make it through the traffic?
I gave
yourself an hour.
I gave myself an hour, but I gave myself an hour because I figured it'd be 15, 20 minutes over every hour. So I don't know. We are debating ways in which to do this. I might be hiring a car. So it's going to be an expensive day for me, too.
Helicopters.
I'll be standing outside bookstores going, Uber, Uber.
Why? Why is this important? I mean, you can sell books at Amazon and at the big stores.
Well, number one, independent bookstores are the reason why I have a career. When this started out, a book of poems and stories by a Spokane Indian would have never fit anybody's algorithm. This was a very specific case of a very specific group of people, the white liberal women of independent bookstores promoting my career. It's a very specific political focus. And multicultural literature exists in large part due to the efforts and passions and politics of college-educated liberal white women. So that's why I'm doing this, to pay back the career they gave me.
And perhaps they've also changed the country a little bit.
Oh, they've always changed the country. You know, right in the mix of any social change in this country, any fight for civil rights, are liberal white women.
What's this poetry collection that you have come up with? Are these all new? What I've Stolen, What I've Earned?
What I've Stolen, What I've Earned. They're all brand new poems. A lot of prose sonnets, which means they're not sonnets at all, but I like to call them prose sonnets. And it's, they're about Indians.
Well,
poems about Indians.
That's a departure.
Yeah. Actually, East Indians this time. I think they're more urban, more focused on city life, I think. There's less specific Indianness. There's only a couple powwows in the poems.
Something you said, I guess it was in this article in The Atlantic about the poem that made Sherman Alexie. And I'm afraid that I pulled it and then I lost it. A reservation state of mind.
Oh.
Quoting
Adrian C. Lewis, who's a Paiute Indian, from his poem. And the line that really got me, that made me want to be a poet, is, "Oh, Uncle Adrian, I'm in the reservation of my mind."
Reservation of
mind. It was to be understood, to be seen like that, was amazing. People talk about that moment when they've decided what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. And I don't think people actually have that moment very often. But I did.
That notion, it was a little bit of a, what did some people call it? It flipped, right? So your perception flipped a little bit?
Of the whole world, yeah. I mean, the big thing is I suddenly felt valuable. it's an astonishing moment in somebody's life, an Indian boy's life, a reservation Indian kid's life, coming out of poverty and colonialism and oppression to suddenly feel valuable at age 20 for the first time, to feel important, that something you might think or say or write could be important.
I know you told this story before, but I find it fascinating. So you were writing, you wrote him.
We became pen pal friends, and during college, when I was in college, he's older, he's 10, 15 years older, and after college, I graduated, and I ended up back on the res with my liberal arts degree and no job, and I thought, wow, this is what it comes to, and I wrote him a, you know, raging, screeching letter in the days when people actually put pen to paper, and he wrote back. And said, it was funny, he's very succinct, wrote back and said, keep writing your poems. And he had a $50 bill taped to the paper. So he sent me $50. And with those typewriter ribbons I bought, I wrote most of the Lone Ranger and Tonto Fistfight in Heaven.
And where did you write those? Didn't I read that? Was that a borrowed typewriter too?
It was my girlfriend's electric typewriter that I borrowed.
I think that's a great story that he did that. Do you find yourself doing that, encouraging young writers?
I send out letters, notes, fan letters. I don't send out cash. Maybe I should just start sending out checks. Wouldn't that be fun to have a random $50 bill show up?
Yes, I'm sure with Alexei. Keep writing.
Keep writing.
So he sounded really interesting to me, and I don't know if I had done it last time we talked, but I looked him up this time, and I read a bunch of poems, and I pulled this one just because I enjoyed it.
Yeah, so I'll read this. It's by Adrian C. Lewis. It's called I Flew Into Denver, April. I flew into Denver, April. Rock salt and sand peppered the asphalt, reflecting myself on a downtown street where I'd paused on my route to smell lilacs. The wanton winds chortled wickedly over remnant snows and gray clumps of doom, and my heart soared gladly at winter's death. But an hour later, I had whiskey breath at the dead-end bar full of Indians. A Winnebago woman waltzed with me and told me how handsome I truly was. So I bought her drinks and felt her hips, and somewhere between the grinds and dips, she lifted my wallet and split.
I think that poem is so funny. Lifted my wallet and split. I love the rhymes. I'd also like how handsome I truly was.
Yes, yes. Truly handsome. So, I mean, the thing is, he's funny, he's brutal, he's honest, he's bitter. He doesn't romanticize the human experience, let alone the Indian experience. You know, I love this really switch from the beauty of the landscape and the end of winter and the promise of spring, and then, you know, rhyming death and breath, which you would think, which is a cliche. That's an easy rhyme, but the way he does it, is brilliant and beautiful and ironic, and he remains one of my very favorite poets.
That's great. I also was reading that New York Times, one of the books, I just lost it now. One of the books you got when you were 15 that you received as a gift, The Basketball Diaries by Jim Carroll.
Yeah, my dad bought it for me because he just thought it was about basketball. I remember I still have the book. I still have it. That cover had it was split in half. The right side had The Basketball Diaries, a novel by Jim Carroll, and then it had a photo of Jim Carroll holding a basketball, and it looked like a book about basketball, and it is, certainly. Jim Carroll was an all-city basketball player, but in New York, serious player. But, of course, it's mostly about heroin addiction, and it's about poetry and about pain and, you know, the terrors of Catholicism, and my dad gave it to me for my 15th birthday.
What I like about Jim Carroll, and we got to interview him once, long time ago. What I liked about him also was that his music, for example, there's a song I always think about that he wrote, "These are people who died.
Who died. These are people who died. They're all my friends and they died."
And it's that same sort of bittersweet.
Funny humor. Yeah, I know his album, Catholic Boy, remains constantly on my playlist.
Is that right?
Yeah, no, it's I've had it on every single, whatever technology is the latest, I have a copy of it.
Sherman Alexie is here. He's going to be at 5 independent bookstores in Seattle on Saturday. Do you have them in top of your head?
I have from 10 to 11. I'm at Elliott Bay Bookstore. From noon to 1, I am at University Bookstore on the Ave. from 2 to 3, I am at Queen Anne Book Company up on
That'll
Queen
That'll be a
Anne.
Tough one.
Yeah, that's going to be really difficult. 4 to 5, I'm at Secret Garden Bookstore in Ballard. And from 6 to 7, I'm at Third Place Books up in Lake Forest Park.
Oh, that's great. So big circuit.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah. So
that Queen Anne one.
Queen Anne one is going to be difficult. I'm probably going to park it in a 7-Eleven there. There's a 7-Eleven right by Queen Anne. I'll park there and get my ticket. I'll get towed.
So you have
I challenge you 7-Eleven.
Don't say that. They're listening. So you have been having fun with Twitter.
I enjoy Twitter. Yes.
I like this one that came out 4 hours ago. Gotta love conservatives who live in liberal cities. Those urban GOPers got huge crusses on the sexy socialists. Shama Sawant, you're thinking.
Oh, yeah. And I've got friends, a couple of friends I play ball with who, you know, we're always in these email arguments about various stuff. And I always go back to, well, if you think liberals are wrong, why do you live in the most liberal city in the United States? Good food, good fashion, good art, good culture. We make, if you want to live in a great place, you have to go where the liberals are.
If you just would keep the minimum wage a little lower, things would be okay.
Yeah, that's what they're worried about.
Injured Kobe Bryant signs huge 2-year contract extension. Lakers can't rebuild now. Most selfish move of selfish career. Wow.
Kobe Bean Bryant.
You're mad at him.
I'm not mad at him. I think it's hilarious. I think it's so typical of the man's career that he still believes himself to be this good and deserving of being the highest paid player in the NBA, and he's destroyed the franchise for years. There's no way they can contend for at least 5 years. And the funny part is watching his loyalists, which is a whole. It's a real peek into fundamentalism, religious fundamentalism, to
basketball read, loyalists
to read the comments of Kobe's fans, the delusional, absolute delusional belief in him.
Is that's not all professional athletes, though, is it? And I've been impressed with some of the professional football players on the Seattle Seahawks. What have you thought about? I mean, I don't know enough about them, but Marshawn Lynch and quarterback. I mean, they just seem like. They want to play the game first.
They're dudes. They're just dudes. Well, there's nobody more fiercely competitive than Kobe. Kobe would actually do it. He's going to be playing in Italy at age 67 on a $1 million contract. Kobe's going to keep playing. They're dudes. And there's a lot of guys in all professional sports who are just dudes who are happy to be there. There are mercenaries. And Kobe's both.
Sherman Alexie's a dude. I want to be a holy fool, but always settle for secular dork. You're having fun with Twitter. All right. We'll see you at the independent bookstores.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. It was good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
Sherman Alexie, award-winning novelist, poet, and sports fan. This is The Record.